This podcast is brought to you by Cashflow Mastery, the only revenue management course in our industry that teaches you step by step how to become a master revenue manager in your hosting business. For more info, check out getpaidforyourpad.com/cashflowmastery. That's getpaidforyourpad.com/cashflowmastery.
Get paid for your pad. Get paid for your pad. Get paid for your pad.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Get Paid for Your Pad. Today's guest is Nick Libertin in French, I think. And Nick has an incredible story to share. Nick has an incredible story to share that I'm really excited about hearing. I think there's going to be a lot of learning lessons coming from that. So, Nick, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks for having me. Very excited to kind of share my story. Hopefully, some of the viewers will get some learning points and from it. And, someone can find something beneficial from it is my hope.
Awesome. Well, let's dive into it. Why don't you give us a quick background? How did you get into short-term rentals? And then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, great. I would say first and foremost, thank you to you and Eric for the podcast, because I've listened to a ton of the episodes, and I feel like as we'll delve into the story, I mean, I think that it really helped me tremendously in asset protection, some of the guests you've had. My story, me and my wife, we've always envisioned having kind of a vacation home. That was our why, right? We were like, we have three kids, we want to travel, we want to get out. But financially it wasn't sustainable just to buy a place and then really let it sit. So our first thought was Florida, right? Her parents have a place kind of in Boynton Beach, which is near Fort Lauderdale, Miami. And then she has some cousins down there. And then we actually live in Cleveland, so it was a direct flight. So kind of all these things culminated into us purchasing a place down there. So that was where we started with short-term rentals. And that went really well. We went down there, bought it. We put a couple offers in. This is, May 2020, right? So it's the Florida market, and interest rates are 3%. Everyone's moving from New York. It's peak COVID, so we had to put multiple offers. We finally got one accepted in a place that's about a mile from the beach, and that went great. We were making money. We could go down there once or twice a year with our family, with our kids. You'd see the kids playing in the pool. They just loved it. It was great. So that's kind of how we got started into the short-term rental space. And we still have that property. We still rent it out.
Right on. And is that the property where that you experienced your interesting journey with?
No. So that property is, knock on wood. Yeah. It is doing really well. We still own it. It's we'll put our listings in the show notes, and you guys can take a look at it. But so that is not, so me and my wife were both on board with that place in Florida. And then it was going really well. 2 years went by, set some cash reserves aside. And then I've always wanted a place in the mountains, right? I like hiking. I like outdoor activities. It's just a passion of mine. So my wife reluctantly agreed to get a place in the mountains. and you'll see kind of later on in the show, I'm probably taking some heat for that at this point in time. But yeah, so we looked into some, market mountains on the East Coast, mostly Appalachian, right? So I know Pigeon Forge was a big one. We looked at Blue Ridge, which is where we eventually bought, Asheville, things like that. We kind of ultimately stumbled on Blue Ridge, Georgia. And the reason why we kind of fell in love with the town, we love the hiking around there. It was pretty easily accessible from a plane flight, because it was, there was directs from Cleveland to Atlanta, and we could just, get off the plane, drive, be there in an hour, hour and a half. So that was the property of interest in this episode. So we purchased that in 2022. It would have been almost 2 years to the day, 2022 May, and yeah, and that's kind of how we ended up with that property.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, I'm sure everybody is super excited now to hear what actually happens after this build up. So you know, let's get into it. Like what? Yes, let's start at the start.
Yeah, what happens? Totally. So we're kind of coming off at a high, right? So this is 2023 ended really well for our family, right? And just this, I think this is a good lesson for everyone. And, you know, when we talk about you, when you and, you know, Eric probably talk about things like cash reserves or asset protection, insurance, this is like the reason why, right? So 2023 ends amazing, right? Nothing went wrong. We've got our systems in place. Everything's going great at both properties. We have Blue Ridge. We have Fort Lauderdale. We're cash flowing. And so then January happens in 2024. And January 4th, I'll just, like I said, a day in infamy for our family. Like I was on a Zoom call for work. My wife is actually going to a funeral, of one of her dear family friends. And then we just get, like, we're just getting blown up on text, right? I'm getting like 6 texts. I'm getting one from my neighbor in Blue Ridge. I'm getting a call from our cleaner, like 4 calls. And I'm like, what is going on? And so sure enough, we just start getting pictures and it's our house burning down. Like, and it is not a small fire. It is the entire house is engulfed in flames.
Wow.
Yeah. So that you can imagine kind of getting that call and we're like, what do we do? What's going on? So all these things start circulating through your head, you know, and that's how that's kind of the incident started.
Well, it must be, what did you feel in that moment? Like, I can't imagine getting a message like that.
Yeah, it was just, and we'll go over, I'm sure the you know, everything that happened financially and emotionally, but it was emotionally just devastating, right? Cause I had more of an association with this property, I think, than the Fort Lauderdale one. My kids would go, we'd go on hiking trips there, you know, and as with, I feel like most, like you with Isle Wild, right? Like it's like your baby. Like I installed the locks. I built a lot of the furniture, just so many, you know, just sweat and tears into this property and just to see it visually on flames. I was like, I broke down, man. I broke into tears. My wife was doing the same. It was a lot. I didn't sleep for weeks afterward. So yeah, that is kind of how it happened. Now, I guess we can kind of go into, well, what like happened after that, right? So the fire company, you know, it's rural Georgia, right? It's not like downtown Atlanta. So there is not, it's all volunteer firefighters. And I'll tell you what, my appreciation and thanks goes out to them because they were just, you know, a volunteer firefighting squad came up there, took like, I think it was something like 100,000 gallons of water to put out. And the place was just in ashes, right? So, you know, immediately what we did is we called, you know, our cleaners who, you know, I don't know if we could put their stuff in the show notes, Shane and Jordan Ware in Blue Ridge, and they are phenomenal people. They kind of were our points of contact there, since we don't live there, and kind of coordinated with the fire department. We called the guests. The guests were mid-stay, right? So this is like halfway through their stay, and kind of said, you know, well, first of all, are you okay? Right? I think they had a dog. So it was like, is your dog okay? All the animals okay? Everyone lived. So no one was affected by this. And they were actually out camping. They had no idea that this was going on. So, it was a very weird interaction on that phone call. It was probably about like 3 or 4 minutes. They were very guarded. It was kind of bizarre, you know, and then that call ended. We haven't talked to them since, right? All of our communications have been through Airbnb, things like that. So, yeah, I guess where do you want me to go next? I can kind of go through the facts of what led up, or what do you think would be the best for the narrative?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to kind of go through sort of the rest of the story chronologically, mm-hmm. like What sure. did you do? Where did you go? Who did you call? Like, have no idea. What, I mean, what did you do? You know?
Well, the first question is like, do you go down there? Right? Like, and right. the place was in ashes, right? So like, let's just say 24 hours later, right? The place is in ashes. So like, we have kids. My wife's going to this funeral that's out of state. So you're like, do I go down there? Do I not? And then we ultimately decided, well, what are you going to do when you go down there? I don't even have a place to stay. It's just in ashes. There's nothing left, right? So we made the decision to kind of just wait, right? And see what happened. We had our cleaners were really instrumental, and like they would go up there daily kind of just to check to see what's going on. And so from that standpoint, then it was basically just ironing out facts, right? So why did our place burn down? And so what we for anyone that's never been through this, and I hope no one ever goes through this, is, you call your insurance company and they have cause of origin investigators, right? So these people are paid to figure out what the heck happened. That's what their specialty is, like a lawyer or a doctor, an accountant. They have certain standards they have to adhere to. So they're very good at what they do, right? So my insurance was proper, which shout out to them. They've been phenomenal in this entire process. They go out there, they get a cause of origin investigator. That's like the next week or two, right? Like figuring out, they're interviewing neighbors, they're interviewing the fire department that was there, the cleaners, they're every stone unturned, right? So what the details of what we found out did happen, and this is, it's currently, there's some legal proceedings. So I'm going to just be very objective, and I won't try to insert my emotions or, thoughts too much into it. But what we've concluded, here are the order of events. So around the night before, we have a fireplace in the back of our back deck. It is enclosed with stone. It's got kind of a chimney. You can kind of envision it, it overlooks the mountain there. And then we took all the fire safe precautions. So we have a gate that we put in front of it. So that way there's no ashes that come out. We had the chimney sweeped 3 months prior. But what we do know is that they had a fire the night before, right? Which is totally normal, right? Apparently some of the neighbors had heard that there was some loud noises coming around like 2 or 3 a.m. That could be hearsay, but that's the testimony what some of the neighbors had said. And then at sometime that morning, they had told our cleaners that their 8-year-old son was kind of poking, stoking the fire. Right now, the coals were cold, which, I don't know how your coals are cold, but then they leave at 11:30. And the reason we know they leave at 11:30 is we have video footage documenting them. By 2:30, we start, so 2:30 p.m. So within 3 hours, right, you start to see evidence of smoke on my neighbor's camera because our camera went out. Mm-hmm. So it's like that place is probably starting to be engulfed in flames by then. So, after that, we essentially start getting, texts and stuff like that. So the only other piece of evidence that's pretty substantial is there was a couple eyewitnesses that really kind of ironed out that this happened on the rear of the deck. We're not we couldn't narrow it to it was the fireplace, but we could definitively say that the fire started in the rear of the house, which is where the fireplace is. The winds were also 20 miles per hour that day. So, you can kind of surmise that, poking coals at a fire, so I'll leave it at that. That is as far as the cause of origin investigators, and there was three of them kind of came up with. Because the entire place was burnt down in ashes, they didn't draw a conclusion, right? Because, as I said before, they're held to a standard, right? They have to say, I don't know, let's say 90% chance that this was the reason for the fire. And if it's in ashes, they can't make that conclusion, right? If there's like a toaster oven and half the place is burnt down and the toaster oven's burnt, kind of like maybe it was the toaster oven, but the whole place is in ashes, there's no like forensic evidence, right? So So their ultimate conclusion was the cause of origin was unknown. Now, that being said, I think with the facts of the case, you can kind of insinuate what is the most likely alternative. For example, like, you know, what could have other causes besides that fire, right? Well, we just bought the house a year and a half. Full electric point inspection, all great. And then in addition to that, they eliminated gas as a likely cause. And then I even called the electrical company and said, hey, did you see any excess surge of electric activity around this time? Did our neighbors have electric issues? Nothing. We've never had an electric issue at our house in the year and a half we owned it. So, yeah.
Wow. So essentially, like they couldn't draw like a real conclusion, right? They're like, okay, most likely this is what happens, but there's no conclusion. So what is the next step then?
Yeah. So the next step is right. If you want to file, this case was through Airbnb. Right. So like it was an Airbnb booking. So we filed an air cover claim, right? Because I'm not a lawyer and so don't take this as legal advice. But from my understanding, if the most likely fault is the guest of the damages, right? That's how, you know, and so I felt, you know, that that was probably the case. So we filed an air cover claim, right? So we did that. We also filed with our insurance company and then it gets kind of sorted out. And then, the way air cover works is they do their own investigation for large losses like this. They outsource it to a separate insurance company, right? So let's just say it's X insurance company. So then I'm working with that company and they're acting on behalf of Airbnb, but Airbnb is kind of removed from the process. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's different. I mean, like, you know, and I think this goes back to, you mentioned on your podcast a bunch, it's Airbnb, air cover is not insurance, right? And they will tell you that, or at least I've been told that, you know, and it doesn't, like, if my house burns down, as long as I'm not at fault, like, you know, it's getting covered, right? Like they're gonna have to pay for the house. Now they can go after people if there was they think justification to do so. But air cover doesn't work like that, right? If you have a guest staying and it happens, unless you have substantial evidence, they don't have to rule in that favor. And that's what we kind of found finding out.
Did you end up getting money from either from proper or from air cover? Or how did it end up for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. So it's a difficult to navigate the situation in these kind of circumstances. And then it's like, well, who do you want to cover primarily? Right. Cause everyone kept asking me, well, who do you want to cover primary? And I'm like, I don't know anything about insurance. Ultimately we felt like, hey, you know, we thought that there was reasonable cause to file an air cover claim first. So that's what we did. And then our proper insurance was secondary. And then, what we found too is, you know, that there is a prolonged investigation, obviously, you know, and understandably that goes into something like this. And then, so after 3 months, we found that we were not covered by air cover. And so at that point, then we were covered by our primary insurance, right? So proper, which, you know, I think there's some learning points to gather from that as well, you know. We, thanks to your podcast, we actually switched our coverage in May of 2023 to make sure we had the right short-term rental insurance with a business protection rider, right? So like we had loss of revenue income, which was great. However, there are some things I wish we would have looked over. Like, for example, like excavation fees, right? Like they have caps on all of these, right? So let's say an excavation fee cap is $10,000, right? But it costs like $25,000 to excavate a burnt out house, right? Where's that $15,000 coming from? Well, it's coming from you, right? You know, they may, the way they evaluate the house, like how much are they evaluating your house for? And, you know, is that going to be the equivalent to build a similar house, right? That's something we probably didn't look at as much as we should have too. the loss of the business revenue is one that I thought we did the right way because it was very similar to what we made. And then the furnishings in your house too, right? There was a cap on that. And so I guess I would encourage, you know, everyone right now as they're listening to this podcast is go and look through your insurance, right? And see, hey, if their hurricane happens, my house burns down right now, what would it look like? You know, like how much am I getting paid for each of this? And do you have adequate reserves to bridge that delta? Like, are you going to be able to, you know, or if you aren't, then you need to get more insurance, right? That's what I would say. That's, I think, the big learning point mm-hmm. and why, you know, I wanted to come on the podcast because we weren't ready for that. You know, I never thought about excavating a house, right? Like, who thinks about that? But I mean, yeah, it's in the mountains. You got to get rid of the debris, right? So it's all out of pocket. The other thing too is your mortgage doesn't really stop, right? You think when your house burns down that, like, you know, I don't know, but you still have to pay your mortgage. So now you go from making money on these properties, right? You know, you're cash flowing each month to not only are you not making money, but you're still paying a mortgage on a property that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, emotionally and financially, it is devastating, right? It really was. So I would say those are hopefully some learning points from it.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the how they value the house, like, because the house is not there anymore. Like, how does the insurance company determine what the value of the house is?
That's great. So, like, it should actually be in your insurance contract, or at least it wasn't ours. So they, you know, I think our insurance, I think they fairly evaluated the house. Like, it was, but then it was like, we get 3/4 of that. Right. So they, it's not like they just, at least the way our contract has worked. Right. And that's something I thought we had adequate insurance, you know, but that's something I think to look at for everyone is how much are they evaluating your house for? Right. Which there are, you know, I've talked to a couple insurance people and there are, like, you know, if they inadequately evaluated our house, there's ways you can kind of go after and say, hey, you didn't do this fairly. And there's clauses they have. But if they did and they just say, hey, we're only paying X amount, that's something in your contract. And it was certainly written out in ours, clear as day. I just didn't look at it. So
yeah,
it should be in your insurance, you know, contract when they evaluate and they get you the insurance.
Yeah. So I guess a learning lesson, action step for everybody, and including myself, because yeah, I haven't looked at our insurance documents for a while. I mean, if you would have asked me right now, like, you know, how much do we receive when our property burns down? I don't know. So that's a good, you know, reminder for everybody. Like, hey, go check out those documents, and you know, it's one of those things where you just kind of you look at it, and you know, and then you just kind of go with it.
I know, man.
You kind of feel that it's not, you're never going to need it anyway.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I think that I the lesson here is, like, I'm the reason, right? Like, so, like, you know, for there's the reason you have insurance, and like, I'm sitting here, I'm on this podcast because our house burnt down and it sucks, you know? And I think there's things we did right. You know, I think that we got the right short-term rental insurance. Like, people, you go on Reddit threads and you start reading, and some of this stuff is happening to other people, and like, they didn't have short-term rental insurance. They didn't have X, they didn't have Y. So we were insured the right way. Now, the amount, I would say, you know, is probably less than ideal. Like, I think that would be a good learning point for people. And then just, you know, understanding what your cash reserves are and if you can kind of deal with these swings. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then also understanding, like, what air cover is and what they cover and what they don't. And I think that's a good lesson for people is, you know, based on my experience, right, there has to be substantial evidence that the guest is at fault. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and so maybe this goes back to, you know, if you're cleaner, you know, I mean, not everyone's house is going to burn down, but maybe there's a guest that, you know, does $20,000 worth of damage, or, you know, $30,000, where, and, you know, how are you going to argue that the state prior to that occurring of the house was in order, right? So maybe, you know, having your cleaner take pictures or doing something in a systems fashion every single time, so that way you can provide that substantial proof. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what I would say.
And just to be clear, if you have a standard homeowner insurance, like you're not covered if you rent out your house as a short-term rental, right? That's very important for everybody to understand.
That is extremely important, yeah. And then the other thing is that air cover is not, it is not an insurance. It's something that Airbnb offers in cases to hosts, right? But like it being, you know, a host guarantee or people signing and saying, well, I've got air cover, I don't need, you know, short-term rental insurance. Like I would say that's a very dangerous statement. You know, because in our circumstance, right, it didn't get covered. So like that's something that people need to know.
Yeah. I mean, look, when it comes to air cover, my understanding is like that they're not going to cover if they don't absolutely have to. Right. So like you said, like, you know, if it's not 100% like set in stone and proven that the gas was at fault, even though it's like, you know, I mean, what else could have been, you know, you kind of feel like, well, it's pretty obvious, but yeah, if there's no hard evidence, then they don't have to pay. And if they don't have to pay, they won't. Right.
Yeah. Now there is a you can go into something called arbitration, which I don't know, I'm sure you're aware of, where you can send like a letter and then kind of, you know, argue the facts. But that, I mean, that's costly as well. Right. I mean, you know, you gotta, you know, send a letter and you gotta, you know, you may or may not have to have a lawyer. So there is a way to refute that, but you know, it's tough, right? Because it's not, I mean, it's not, from my understanding at least, you know, and maybe I'm speaking out of context, but I don't think it's not insurance, right? That's what I've heard. It is, you know, mm-hmm. it's something that they offer hosts, you know, in cases right. where there's substantial proof is what I would say.
So a couple more questions. Number one is, how long from the moment that your house burned down, how long did it take for you to receive your payment?
So we kind of tried to actually hold off, right? Because we were trying to have, you know, as mentioned, like our home insurance was like they'd cover three-fourths of the cost of the house, and there was caps on everything, like, you know, so we were hoping that we would have air cover, you know, cover that, because they don't, I don't believe, have a lot of those or deductible. So we kind of held off in hopes that they would cover. So for us, it was, you know, several months until they had the ruling, and then we kind of had to use our insurance. But our proper representative said, hey man, if you want to use this as the primary right away, we'll get the funds to you within several weeks. So, you know, that's something I learned. I'm trying to think the other things that I learned too is when something happens like this to your house, your mortgage company, right, they have incentive to at least give you a little bit of a break. You know, they're not going to say you don't have to pay the mortgage ever, but you know, you can probably get, you know, 3 months, you know, and kind of explain what situation happened. Like we took the photos, we had a brief statement of description and got a hold of someone from our mortgage company. They said, you know, hey, we can give you, you know, at least like 3 to 4 months of holding off on payment, and then you can restart again. So that's something else we did. I think that really helped in that circumstance. Those are probably the big ones. Yeah. I the other thing too is, you know, man, it, like even just from the emotional standpoint, right? Like we had friends up there, you know, we got along with a lot of the neighbors. And it really divided the neighborhood, right? Because it was a short-term rental, you know, burnt down. It, you know, a couple of our neighbors' houses almost burnt down because the fire was so big. So that like was really, you know, I mean, it was, some people reached out and I really appreciate it. And they were really supportive and they were like, hey, anything you need. And some people, the reaction was the exact opposite and it really sucked. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the HOA attempted to kind of like leverage it to ban some short-term rentals. I think like at some point someone made a comment, said they were like happy it burnt down. It was brutal, man. Like it was, yeah, I mean, like the emotional part of it all was probably the hardest, more than the financial.
Mm-hmm. What did you, after you received the money, like what did you guys do?
Yeah. So this is like another good, I think, question, man. Like, cause that's something we thought about for a long time. We were like, well, do we just sell the plot of land and be done with it? Right. But the issue is, and I think there was one other podcast, I want to say it's like Avery Carl's, where they interviewed someone where the house burnt down. They had the same issue. And the issue is that plots of land, right? They don't sell really quick and they don't sell for as much as houses. So we did the numbers and we're like, man, we're barely getting out of this house if we just sell the plot of land. Like we're, I mean, may even lose money. And then that's including the money we put in. So we kind of made the decision, hey, let's build, you know, and let's, you know, then we can determine whether or not we want to keep it or we want to just, you know, sell it after we build it. And that was really the only way financially it made sense. So that's kind of where we're at in that process. We cleaned it up. You kind of have to wait about a month to clean it up because there's a lot of cause of origin investigators. You don't want them to miss anything. So I, you know, we kind of like let them look through the debris, things like that. And then it's clean up and then it's, you know, basically starting to build a house from scratch.
Mm-hmm. So right now you guys are under construction on the new house?
Yeah, we have the cleanup done. We were having this, it's on a mountain. So we're having like civil engineers take a look and basically say, okay, you can build at this angle, things like that. We have all plans ready though. So I think we're starting to get more excited about the process of rebuilding and stuff like that. But, yeah, it took a while to get there for sure. A lot of sleepless nights, a lot.
I can imagine, yeah. And you also, as you're building, you still have to continue to pay your mortgage as well, right?
Yeah.
And you don't have income. So it's like, yeah. Is that being covered as well?
So because we listened to your podcast, I think I emailed you about it. Who was the guest that was from Los Angeles where, I don't know, one of the guests had some kind of medical injury, but she talked about for 10 minutes about short-term rental insurance. So that I'm so glad we got that. Cause she also, I think mentioned, missed business revenue and that, so we added that rider on with proper. So that actually is helping us pay our mortgage. Right. So I think mm-hmm. that we're set from that standpoint, but yeah, you still have to pay your mortgage. We did get it. We're going to get a break for about 3 months or so. So of not paying it. Mm-hmm. But then after that, yeah, I mean, it's the same mortgage each month, you know, that they're expecting, you know, and we don't really want to cancel it because it is at a low interest rate. So we're just kind of stuck mm-hmm. paying it while we're building.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you jumping on the podcast here and sharing this because, you know, hopefully there's somebody who's listening right now who's going to take action and actually look into this and get better protection. And hopefully that will, if something bad happens in the future, that might prevent a lot of trouble for them. So definitely really appreciate your sharing and you know, good luck with everything. And hopefully, you know, the home will turn out really nice and you'll be able to either sell it or you potentially still want to rent it out as an Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So thank you so much for having me on the podcast. You know, we'll leave, I'll leave my contact information with you. So if anyone, you know, wants to reach out or anything, or maybe even just share, you know, with me what they've gone through or any advice they want to give me or any advice I can give them. So I'm just happy to kind of tell our story and hopefully something good will come out of it for somebody. So,
yeah. Would you want to share your contact information so that the people who are listening?
Sure. Do you want me to just say it out loud or?
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay. You can look us up on Facebook. We're, you know, the Villa at Victoria Park. Our email is also villa@victoriapark.gmail.com. And then we have an Instagram handle and stuff as well. I can email you that. So, if people want to, you know, and then the last thing is we have a direct booking website. So if you want to go down to Fort Lauderdale, we have a place, not so much in Blue Ridge, but so
not anymore.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Nick, I appreciate you sharing, man. I'm sorry for that. You had to go through all this. And hopefully, you know, hopefully sharing your story will help somebody in the future. Any last thoughts before we jump off?
No, thanks, man. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. All right. Thanks, Nick. And to the listeners, hope you enjoyed this crazy story. Hope it's helpful. Hope you've taken some learning lessons from it. You might want to go over your short-term rental insurance and really make sure that you understand what you are covered against. And with that said, we'll be back soon with another episode. So we'll see you then.
Get paid for your pet. Get paid for your pet. Get paid for your pet.
I have a question for you. Do you have a solid revenue management strategy in place to maximize the revenue for your listings? Is revenue management part of your daily routine? If not, then you're leaving money on the table. The days that we can ignore revenue management in our hosting business and still do well are over, my friends, and they won't come back. So if you either don't use dynamic pricing and manually enter prices on the OTAs, or you have a pricing tool set up but you're not sure how to use it correctly, then the Cashflow Mastery is for you. In this brand new course, I teach you step by step how to set up your pricing tool, create a winning revenue management strategy, and give you a daily, weekly, and monthly workflow to evaluate your portfolio performance and make strategic price adjustments. I walk you through how we set up our revenue management for FreeWild, from setting up your base price to minimum night stays, length of stay discounts, adjacent day pricing, orphan night pricing, and much more. On top of that, you'll get access to countless of calculators and tracking sheets that will give you the insights you need to make the right pricing decisions. The course comes with a Facebook group where you can ask questions every day and monthly live Zoom calls to help you stay on track. Do you want to manage your revenue and master your cash flow? Then sign up now at getpaidforyourpad.com/cashflowmastery. That is getpaidforyourpad.com/cashflowmastery.